Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the New Books in Anthropology, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Liliana Gill, a host on the channel, and today I have the pleasure to talk to Dr. Netris Gaskins, who is the author of the book Techno-Vernacular Creativity and Innovation, Culturally Relevant Making Inside and Outside of the Classroom, published by MIT Press in 2021. Welcome to the show, Netris. I'm very happy to talk about your work.
Yes, thanks for having me.
To get us started, it would be great if you could tell us a bit about the book. This is not an ethnographic work in the traditional sense of the term, but it strikes me as the product of a lot of participant observation. How did you come to this project? What made you want to write this book?
The book is actually my PhD research. Many of the sort of the frameworks and some of the activities and projects mentioned in the book come from that research, either during the doctoral process or as postdoctorate, meaning I didn't actually do a postdoctorate, but post the doctoral process, like the year or two after. So it's an approach to STEAM learning, science, technology, engineering, art, and math that engages students from historically marginalized communities, or as we say, underestimated and underrepresented communities, and culturally relevant and inclusive maker education. And so this framework connects technical literacy, equity, and culture, encompassing different creative innovations produced by groups that are often overlooked. So I spent most of my time of the 4 years as a PhD student, three of those years were spent just collecting information about the engagements of these groups in terms of technology and some of the other STEAM disciplines, to really come up with ways to develop educational activities from them.
And as you were just explaining, the book offers many ideas for developing culturally relevant educational modules that can help the inclusion of underrepresented groups in science and technology. And in the book, you focus specifically on African American, Indigenous, and Latinx kids. Could you tell us a bit about these modules, if you could tell us a bit more of what these modules are? For instance, I'm particularly excited about your analysis of innovations in hip hop with the examples of Cyphers and the work of Grandmaster Flash.
Yeah, and so, you know, the idea of a cipher as being sort of this sort of circle, it's a place where kinship is fostered. It's a place of community as well as creative expression. That was an important part. And also I found that this kind of circular place space was found in not just in African-American communities, but around the world. So in India, it's called Rangoli, or Kolam, and in many Native American or Indigenous groups have some sort of cipher or cosmogram specifically. In Buddhism, there's cosmograms or mandalas. So the idea of the circle, this nonlinear form, is something that you find across many non-Western cultures. And I was really interested in seeing all the different ways that that was used, even when it's used as like a hoop, like in sacred hoop dancing in some Indigenous communities. So I was really thinking about that. And I was still thinking about the idea of DJs that were, you know, you form a cipher and then there would be either break dancers in the middle with, you know, participants on the outside and audience, or it could be graffiti writers, or it could be MCs or rappers in the cipher. And then the DJ was kind of the person that brought it all together or provided the background music for the performances. So it became like this kind of community of creative expression. And I was really looking at the sort of practices that came out of that and how that could be applied to in the classroom and also in other educational settings. So that it's very important to find those cross sections and also other types of things like quilts and things like that that are helpful and apply that into what you might have to learn in class, a math class or a computer science class and things like that.
Can you tell us a bit more about those workshops and how you applied this knowledge to the STEAM?
Yeah, we here at Lesley, we did. I wanted to celebrate the 50th year of hip hop, so I proposed doing a hip hop academics STEAM workshop in the fall of this year, and it was looking at hands-on instruction and collaborative engagement, so that the intersection of mathematical thinking, invention, creativity, culture, and identity. So a lot of the frameworks that came out of my TVC work were applied in this workshop. So there are three modes of working, modes of production that I looked at in the book. One is reappropriation, another is remixing, and then there's improvisation. And so we had three different strands in the workshop, and they were based on grade level. So one of the and then there's a poster that people could see. And so in one case, we were looking at rap music, and then using text effects, which is from Google's, using AI to understand how AI works, but also giving teachers the opportunity to use text effects to create their own lyrics, their own rhymes. And then, of course, they would take that to the students and figure out how to explain how what they did. And then we also looked at computational thinking for younger students, like in kindergarten and first grade, and looking at Grandmaster Flash's quick mix theory, which Flash was known to do, which is one of the things he did with turntables, which is kind of a computational and mathematical kind of process. And then them being able to use microcontrollers and things like Makey Makeys and Kibo robots to shift and remix the block, the code blocks, to create creative to make things, and using the microbit to do some graffiti tagging. Well, the tags would be these electronic placards that they would put up, and they would light up or do some other type of thing. So it was really about how to apply some of the things from hip hop culture into something that teachers could bring into their classrooms. And so that's one example.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. And I was, so you described many of these workshops you've been involved in, and I was wondering what happens after the workshops you describe. I was curious to know if you've been able to follow some of the kids that did these workshops with you, whether these experiences have had a strong impact on them. And for you, what would be the ideal outcome of this type of work? What's the horizon? What's the goal here?
Well, the goal is to level the playing field. Time and time again, we look at statistics that show, and then this is before the lockdown COVID 19 pandemic, we see there's underrepresentation in STEM, in STEAM, where we see a lot of representation for white students, and a little bit, and maybe sometimes more representation for Asian students. But when we get down to African American, and maybe next to that is Latinx, and then after that, it's Indigenous, with a very small number of people represented in STEM fields. So my ideal is to have more representation in STEM and STEAM, and also more. What I'm hoping will be the broadening of those disciplines in ways that engage communities that are normally left out or excluded or overlooked, and in ways. So when we talk about engineering, we're not just talking about engineering from a Western standpoint, and sometimes we're not just talking about engineering from kind of a mainstream standpoint. We may just talk about Grandmaster Flash and what he did to create some of the things, or invent some of the things that he invented, and include that and the engineering curriculum, and talk about how these engagements with technology and science and engineering from underrepresented groups, although not in the classroom or not in the discourse on an academic level, are really ways to engage students who normally wouldn't go into science or technology or engineering. So that's the ideal world, is that those bridges are. Those links, those gaps are bridged, and the playing field is leveled.
That's excellent. And have you been able to see some of that happening with the kids you worked with?
I think, when I talked about in 2016, I was teaching advanced placement computer science principles in a high school for the visual and performing arts. And all of those students, high school students, had arts majors, and which some of them, like maybe two-thirds of the class, were taking computer science for the first time in their lives. And I think it was the first time that that school had a computer science course. And so this is new for everybody all the way around, but I wanted to make sure that throughout the year, because this is a 4-day-a-week, year-long course, that they were seeing connections between what they did and things that they were interested in, for like they were arts majors in music or visual arts, and seeing a connection to computer science. And so I was looking at, curriculum and helping teachers to understand that the goal was to keep them engaged. And what was really happening is they were doing that. They're blending the computer science into their artistic practice. When we got to data and information, a lot of the music students were composing to translate the data that they were looking at into a composition, a musical composition. Others were doing, 3D printed type of bar charts to represent the information that they were picking from, data sets that they were looking at. And they'll take that with them, and they'll, if that idea at the college level to do projects, they'll bring some of that knowledge with them into those projects. And there have been students who I mentored or had independent study with me, who are out in the world doing things in their own way that bring some of the things to happen in the classroom with them. And so some of them I keep in contact with, and they stay true to their art form. They're, still musicians, but there's always, this sort of knowledge that they're kind of steam in their approach to things. And that comes from the engagement and the work we do in the classroom or in the lab.
Thank you. Yeah. And you're really promoting a lot of interdisciplinary thinking, right? You're providing the tools to create interdisciplinarity. Throughout the book, there's an important critique of the maker movement. about the maker movement, particularly those it excludes, since it tends to be white and male dominated. I was wondering if you've seen progress on this front. Are things getting any better?
Well, one thing there used to be, or I don't, when Barack Obama was in office, there was a Nation of Makers organization that came to be, and they invited from all states different representatives to come to Washington, to the White House, and talk about the state of the nation in terms of making. And one of the points in my region, which was Northeast, we talked about I talked about how some of these groups are already doing making and they're just not calling it that. So what has been defined by making is a particular culture, and that that culture represents who created it. And that there are other types of making happening in communities that would probably fit fine in a maker space, but they don't call it a maker space. One example of that is a film called Underwater Dreams. And it is about the sons at the time, I think now it's co-ed, but they're sons of undocumented immigrants from Mexico, largely in, or some South America, who in a high school robotics competition, and a college and high school robotics competition, they won and beat MIT with their underwater robot. And then when I went to a panel with one of those young men who won, they asked, well, why would you get into robotics? And he said, because he said hitting switches. And I realized he was talking about low rider car culture in his community. He saw engineering all the time in the garages where people were doing low rider cars. And because of that connection, maybe the teachers actually made those connections for the students, or they made those connections themselves, that that was how they made. And they don't call it maker spaces. They call it whatever they call it in lowrider car culture, but it doesn't have to be a maker space. And so I think maker space is a particular type of thing. And I think that there are other examples of making that fit in that kind of general category of making, but often are excluded or overlooked, even though they are those what we would consider to be making.
I completely agree. Thank you so much. To finish our conversation, I had one more question. Now that the book is out there in the world, are there any new projects you're excited about? I've seen some of your powerful portrays using generative AI. Maybe you could tell us a bit about how your art, about your current art, and how it expands on your community and educational work.
Sure. And I mentioned in 2016 doing that, doing the advanced placement computer science principles, and the very first one of the unit 7 of that curriculum that I had approved through College Board dealt with generative AI in 2016. So I was, from a teacher's point of view, just trying to connect students to what was happening, what I thought were trends that were coming. I was kind of announcing, hey, you might want to look at AI to make art. And so Deep Dream was the technology then, and more specifically, neural image style transfer, which is what I started doing personally after that class was over. I just kept going and just kept using Deep Dream for a while until the next thing came up. And so it started in 2016, around 1 or 2 years after the invention of generative AI. So I was really excited about that, something new was coming that might fit into something I could do creatively. And then, a perfect example as it relates to community. And 2 years ago, when the late Greg Tate died, I had done a portrait of him. There's a whole story behind, it's a whole cyclical thing that's been happening. I discovered Romare Bearden, artist, in the same year that I took my first computer graphics class in high school. Romare Bearden had merged his love of Black life and jazz with abstraction and collage. Then I was listening to Public Enemy and noticing how the Bomb Squad production team made collages of sampled sounds. And that led to remixing that you find in the book. This idea of taking things, pre-existing things, and recreating, kind of remixing them and combining them to make something new. And then in 1992, I graduated with a BFA in computer graphics from Pratt in Brooklyn, New York. And then I moved to Chicago and I bought Greg Tate's book, Fly Boy in the Buttermilk, Essays on Contemporary America. And then as a grad student, I was still into collage, and then I moved to the computer. So instead of cutting and pasting paper, I was using software and computers. And then I was, all that was happening around the same time in the early 90s. And then I started building labs, computer graphics labs, because I noticed that in the places where I taught art, they didn't have computers or didn't have computer art or computer graphics. So I was trying to bridge what was a digital divide. And it all kind of came together at some point in that AP computer science class where you had art students and computer science and this emerging generative AI scene that was happening. And so I treat my generative AI making as a collage. It is a collage between concepts and prompts. It's a collage sometimes of actual output, where I'll have multiple outputs that I'll bring into Adobe Photoshop and collage or combine. So the layers kind of merge into other layers. It's just an extension of what I was doing in the early 1990s. So when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, I was creating and posting portraits, and some of them made it into the Smithsonian show titled Futures in 2021. Then Greg Tate passed away that same year. I made his portrait, and then his family and friends reached out. The chief curator at the Museum of Contemporary African Diaspora and Arts, or MOCADA, reached out to me, and they were interested in using the Greg Tate image, so they licensed it and hosted it on this wall as an oversized vinyl mural. And at the same wall where their soon to be sculpture garden now is a sculpture garden is located. And it's been up there ever since. And so people don't even know, there is a placard there that has my name on it and description, but most people don't even see the placard. They just see the Greg Tate. And it's been, different festivals around that mural. People go and do selfies. His band, the Burnt Sugar Orchestra, had a reunion in front of the mural, and I was there for that. So there were these historic moments. It was at Lincoln Center with the band. It was on the cover of a newspaper in South Africa where Greg had connections. And it was even in a New York Summer Stage event where people did a second line to in tribute to Greg Tate and walk and rode around with the sign with the image along with the second line band. So it's just an example of how community became involved with something that was starting on a computer. And specifically started with AI.
That's so awesome. I wish we could show the images, but I leave everyone with these suggestions and they can look up further and read your book. And thank you so much,
And
Beatrice. Yes.
the
And
cover is AI. It's one of my first,
yes.
yep, the cover is one of my first generative AI portraits of one of my students.
Oh, one of your students. Do you want to tell us more about it? Because we're going to
Yeah,
show it on the website.
I had a different cover, and the Leah Buckley, who wrote the foreword to the book, she wrote about the AI art, and then the editor said, "Oh, I didn't know that part about you." And then I, when she saw some of the work, she said, "Well, that has to be the cover." And so that's how that happened.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Natris. This was a pleasure.
Yes, thank
Thank
you.
you.